The views and opinions expressed in the Xeanderthals podcast are those of the creators and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any of our employers.
Hello and welcome to the Xeanderthals podcast, where three high school buddies, Brandon,
Isaac,
and Ben,
now far removed from high school, take a look around and talk about the things that we think should be talked about. Whether it's new technology, economics, social issues, or psychology, we're here to help you navigate this fast-changing world. My name's Brandon. I'm a scientist. By that, I mean I have a bachelor's degree in science and marketing. I work as a copywriter for a digital marketing company.
Hey, how's it going, guys? My name's Isaac. I'm a father, husband, police officer. That's about it.
Hey, I'm Ben. I have a master's degree in mathematics, and I'm currently stumbling my way towards a PhD.
And we are the Xeanderthals.
You're listening to episode 3 on social issues.
Aziz Ansari is a famous actor and comedian. He has expressed support for the fight against sexual assault and now finds himself with an assault allegation. He met a young woman, we'll call her Grace, whose real name has been kept confidential, at an Emmy Awards after party. Grace gave Aziz her phone number at his request and later went on a date with him. He urged her to return to his apartment with him, where things got a little weird. In her words, it was 30 minutes of me getting up and moving and him following and sticking his fingers down my throat again. It was really repetitive. It felt like a fucking game. He repeatedly moved her hand to his crotch and ignored her verbal and nonverbal cues that she was uncomfortable. The verbal cues included Grace telling Aziz that she didn't want to feel forced because she would hate him. After the event finally ended, Grace reached out to her friends in tears about the event on her ride home in an Uber that he called for her. Later, he texted her telling her that he enjoyed their time together, to which she replied by letting him know how uncomfortable she was and that he was out of line. He responded to that by saying that he clearly misread some things. What follows is a conversation between the creators of the Xeanderthals, where we discuss this crazy shit.
Yeah, the text response is real simple, like, yeah. Oh, I must have misread some things. Like, you mean when I was running away from you for an hour and a half?
I didn't realize this makes me feel uncomfortable actually means this is making me feel uncomfortable.
I didn't realize I don't want to be forced. Like, I don't want to be forced. She said I don't want to be forced to him. Who the fuck says that in normal conversation?
Like, I fail to see how me pushing your head onto my penis is forcing you. I'm sorry.
I didn't even use hardly any muscles. I just had to look at you long enough. Like, that can't be forced. The fingers in the mouth thing, dude, that was so uncomfortable to read. Just like he's just like making a V and like trying to fuck her mouth. Like, what is this?
When she said the V thing, I thought he was gonna be like doing like, this thing. Like,
We've all been there. We were in high school once,
right?
Yeah. But I mean, hey, let's be real. We were all in middle school once. We were in the sixth grade.
As much as I don't like to admit it,
this guy's like he's older than us. He's like in his early 30s, I think.
And he makes his living thinking about this shit.
And that's the thing is like my male mind is like wanting to make excuses for the guy, honestly. Like, yeah. I know it is. It's making excuses for the guy.
It's making excuses for you, not for him. Like, let's be completely honest.
Because you see yourself in the situations.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then they start bringing up the fact that, like, not only is this guy just like a piece, you know, kind of a piece of shit and everything, but he's also like a guy who gets paid and like makes his living thinking about these things and talking about them. Because now it's like hypocritical, you know, like totally hypocritical.
It makes it really hard to believe.
It wasn't bad enough already. Now he's a hypocrite. Say what you want about Hitler, but at least he wasn't a hypocrite, okay?
At least he did what he believed, and he spoke it actively and with his head held high. Man. Hitler did as he exterminated the Jews.
What you see is what you get.
Do you want the serpent that's honest to you or the serpent that's dishonest? Like, I don't know.
I don't want the serpent at all.
That's not an option. I don't. Yeah. We're destined to have the serpent. It's in the Bible. Snakes will bite at our heels, Isaac.
If it's destined and there's, you know, I can't just die and be out of it. Ease or Hitler. I mean, I guess give me Hitler. At least
I can't just die and be out of it.
This is kind of what I look at, like the difference between like liberals and conservatives. Like conservatives like to look at these social issues and go like, well, this is just the way the world is, and you need to stop being a baby and get over it, basically, you know?
Yeah, sure.
But what the liberals do is they go, well, yeah, no, this is fucked up and blah, 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 blah. But then their actions are totally different from their words. And then they're all just fucking hypocrites, you know? It's like, oh, Trump,
it's all of Hollywood,
Trump,
right?
Trump is unqualified to be president because he's a reality show star.
Oprah Winfrey!
Yeah, Oprah, you get a president. Everybody gets a president. Look under your chair. There's a president.
It's like that meme. I remember I posted it like last year or something where everything was going to shit. But it's that Jesus leaning in from the side type thing. He's like, I just want you to know I'm very disappointed in all of you.
Right.
you just need to know this.
Sorry, Jesus.
That's why I think as a society, we need to start looking inward. We need to start looking at ourselves and realize in a way it means we're going to have to start, I don't know if forgiving is the right word, but we're going to have to start understanding no one is innocent in virtually anything. Like, we're all like fucking complicit or active or whatever, and we have to just fucking move past the fact that humans are fucking shitty, and we need to focus on solutions and making ourselves better. We have to, I think it's good that we can come out and fucking talk about this shit that's really uncomfortable. We need to get over feeling attacked by every time somebody, you know, something like this comes out, you know, and we need to just embrace the fact that, like,
that hurts, man. Like, why are you trying to like come at me like that?
Any of these things could be any of us, you know, in the right circumstances or whatever. Like, if you were raised by a certain kind of person or in a certain situation, or even just for the simple fact of like never having done a lot of these things or whatever, doesn't really make you all that much better than anybody else. It means you've made better decisions or whatever. Use that and teach people how to make better decisions.
So I can tell you one thing for like my own personal experience is I know that when I'm super emotionally charged, lines of good behavior can get blurred really fast. It's like normally like I might be against this behavior, but right now it feels justified. Right. And so then like I can, you know, like we were saying earlier, I can just be an asshole and know I'm being an asshole and still not be able to stop it. I have achieved on many occasions acknowledging that emotion is rising up and then just removing myself from that situation. For instance, if you're particularly sensitive to attack and somebody, you feel like somebody's attacking you and those emotions are rising up and you're about to be a complete fucking asshole, and then you just leave, it's like, okay, well, I guess I'm no longer interacting with that person anymore.
Right.
Because they just make me want to hit them.
I think too often the people with truly valid concerns, you know, the introverts, the people who actually end up falling victim to most of these types of behavior, they're unwilling to speak up. And we need to start building in those people
the confidence to speak.
The confidence and the ability and the support network that they need to speak up and be heard. Like, I know I respond a lot better because I'm totally capable of just taking over conversation and being a fucking asshole, you know? But I respond well, I like to think anyway, and I try to instill in myself that at the very least, when somebody speaks up and says like, hey, you're fucking being an asshole right now, like I try to listen to that and then correct my behavior, at the very least fucking shut up and listen. You know?
Oh, dude, it knocks me off my train of self-righteousness real fast. When somebody's like, hey, you're being a dick. It's like, oh, fuck, maybe I am.
But so often, like, I get caught up in the moment and whatever, and I just don't realize.
I mean, you might be emotionally into what you're talking about. Like, if you're just really into what you're saying, you're going to talk about it enthusiastically. And sometimes with some of these topics, being enthusiastic can feel hostile. Right. And that's, I mean, I experienced a lot of that with some of the people I was around here. I actually distanced myself from some of them and hang out with them a little bit less than I did. Because they would get real worked up about some social justice issues, and it just felt hostile to me. Who knows? Maybe people will just come together and build little learning communities where they can teach each other Hebrew or something.
right now. Well, that's what religion used to do. That's what religion used to be really good at, you know, especially Judaism. Well, that's why we have the big three religions that we have. The first organized system for educating people, especially like in literacy, was the church. It was the only thing that prioritized everyone, like across the board. It was like, if you're going to be a part of this, you know, you need to learn something about it. So we're going to teach you how to read these books. You know, almost all of our oldest written texts are all religious.
Yeah. Well, and religion, as odd as it is, I learned recently, religion kind of led to the science movement. Religion, the idea absolutely. Of honesty and truth led to wanting to know more about the world.
I don't know that I would say led to, but it was a part of. And because it was encouraging learning, you know?
Yeah. Learning and truth, and in particular, truth and honesty. And then wanting true observations or true predictions about the world.
But then it also became the most powerful force to counteract that movement, you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, at some point that switched.
Galileo spent a huge amount of his life in prison.
Religion inspired the kid that killed it, right? Tried to, at least. It's one of those myth stories, I think.
See, this is the part where he's like, okay, we'll cut it in editing, and then we'll jump back into when he's done peeing. And this part, this exchange between you and me, is going to go into the special bonus features of the DVD.
Absolutely. That's what people are really going to want to spend the money on. Talk about how they want to spend money on us.
Exactly. And we've made that joke so many times before. And I started thinking the other day, I was like, you know, we keep saying, oh, this is special bonus features. We're going to have more special bonus features than we are actual episodes.
Yeah. There's going to be like 30 hours of episodes and like 58 hours of bonus content. It's just like...
Let's be honest. There's like 100 hours of bonus content.
Yeah. I have to say, though, with today's episode, like our attempt at recording it so far, it's better.
Yeah.
It's much better. I think so much of our conversation that was not about automation, like the stuff about Aziz, the stuff, like I think so much of it can just go in the episode or maybe be split up for other episodes.
Bonus features.
I think we should actually use them as episodes, especially some of our conversation about Aziz, because we had the like, we're men and we typically don't want to think that men are bad, and this is like a tough situation for us too, but then like, holy shit, this guy's fucking weird, and like, you know, we had the whole life.
And I hate the fact that I was thinking about, you know, I read that article, and then every other bad thing that's happened in Hollywood, all these men being accused of all this stuff, it's like, I think I was like, wow, this is all horrible. And then at the same time, I find myself, like Brandon said, like somewhat justifying it. It's like, okay, these all can't be real. Some of them, I'm sure, just bullshit. People are just out to get money. And then I remind myself, it's like, okay, wait, no, some of these, the guys were like, okay, I apologize for my actions. And they were actual creeps.
Well,
but I still find myself trying to reason with them.
One thing that is really hard for me, even now, is... the fact that there's, you know, the guy only had his perspective when he made his decision, and the girl only had her perspective when she received it. And so, like, the guy might not have been in the wrong, and the action could still have been wrong.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the shit that, like, I don't know how we handle it. I don't know what we do with that. Where it's like, there's no reason the guy should have believed that what he was doing was bad, and from the girl's perspective, it was terrible.
I mean, there's usually a reason that you should believe that it's bad, whether or not you're able to see it or not.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is you only have your perspective. Like, you have whatever information you happen to pick up, and you can be blinded so intensely by emotion. When you're in that state, like, some signs that say no, you just won't see them without even acknowledging it, because your brain is just like, I'm railroaded into this is a yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole God gave men two brains and enough blood to run one of them. I'm convinced that there is... this little, like, tiny piece of brain that stays, like, completely sober whenever you're hammered. And it stays completely unhorny whenever you're raging and ready to go. He sits right in the back, and you either choose to listen to it or not. But he's like, hey, okay, you are hammered. Don't drive. This is stupid. But he's such a little small part of the back of your brain. It's the same thing with, like, that situation. It's like, all right. Boner's ready to go. Let's get after this. And the little piece is like, hey,
Let's not do that, because that's a bad idea.
You know, we're animals. We're instinctive. You know, we don't understand the root causes of a lot of our behavior.
Absolutely.
You know, we have fight or flight reflexes and stuff like that. You know,
fight, flight, or freeze. There's a third one,
and
which
fuck, yeah,
which is fight, flight, freeze, or fuck. Like that. These are the options.
And that is problematic. You know, it's proving more problematic. You know, and we're trying to correct these things on like an intellectual level, but we're trying to correct things that aren't necessarily all that intellectual, you know?
Yeah, like there's the primal part of our beings, and I feel like in a lot of ways we're out of touch with that. We don't understand a lot of the, because you're right, like those urges, they're real. They exist. It's shit you have to overcome. It's not as if I don't get random urges for sex with women. I just don't fucking act on them because I know that in certain situations it's not appropriate. Yeah. Let's explore the idea that humans are beasts of burden. This is and how it relates to this, because I mean I don't know where I fall on the issue, but I know that some people believe that humans for the sake of or to feel as if we have purpose and meaning, we have to have some task that we're taking care of. And this can be raising a family. It can be carrying just a heavy load for your social group. It can be any number of things. But the idea is that humans to have what we think of as a meaningful life, that you're typically pretty content or you maybe even happy sometimes. We've got to have meaning. So I know in my own personal life, if I don't have some kind of straight to the personal life. I anecdotal evidence is the best kind, and it's the only kind we should ever care about. Disclaimer, that's bullshit. So in my personal life, if I don't have enough on my plate, if I don't have enough responsibility in my life, if I don't have enough imposed structure as a result of having that responsibility in my life, I will smoke a bunch of weed. I'll play some video games. I'll become depressed really quickly. I will not be able to get up off my couch to do shit like brushing my teeth, because why the fuck should I? I'm not going out to be around people. I don't have that kind of responsibility. And so it's like I fall and I devolve very quickly into just like a shit version of myself. So what I mean is that when you're doing something and you forget about you, when you're in the middle of a task and you're not thinking about how uncomfortable you are, you're not thinking about the environment, and you're thinking about what you're fucking doing. Maybe for you it's mixing music or something or fucking around with audio equipment or messing around with your Internet of Things that you have set up. Maybe for Isaac it's beating people in the street. For me, maybe it's sometimes coding will do it. Sometimes,
by the way, things will do it. Isaac, this is what's gonna happen. The more that you just sit there quietly, we're just gonna say things about you. The viewers are just gonna assume
that it's all true.
He can't be bothered to talk. He's too busy beating pedestrians in the street.
Oh, sorry.
That's actually what we can see.
Getting caught up in your conversation.
Oh man, no, fuck you guys. It's a story. I'm talking.
Shut up. Anyway, yeah. Can you win?
Derailing me.
So go on.
You're doing something. You forget about yourself. You forget about the things that plague you. That's what I mean by meaning. And I don't know that necessarily everybody interacts with that way. But I do think that if you don't have it, you spiral down into your own hell. And when I say your own hell, I mean for me it's stuck on the couch depression. For some people, maybe it's going crazy in their house. For who knows what it looks like for each individual.
So I can agree with that. I mean, people need something to do just in general, you know.
Yes.
Your mind is you. And it's a muscle, and it needs to be worked. But I don't think that there's a strict definition for like what needs to be engaging. I don't think that your occupation has to fill that role.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, because like me, I'm the kind of person who I never stop working. In fact, I work harder on my free time. Maybe it's that, like, I have the kind of job right now where I like my job, but
in case the boss hears.
But it doesn't necessarily take all of my intellectual capacity to do my job.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of go through my job on autopilot a lot, where like I'm doing the thing, you know. But when I'm at home, I work. Like when I have a day off, I start my day. I wake up, you know, and I might take a little while to getting up because I can, you know. And for me nowadays, it's like today I slept till 8:30, and that was sleeping in. This is a fucking strange point in my life.
Dude, that's indulgent. Yeah. Like, so how are you even keeping your life together?
I woke up at 8:30 a.m. and then I start deciding how I'm going to spend my day because I don't want to waste it. I have all these things, all of these projects that mostly never get done because I have too many of them. But I like, but I have to be working, you know.
Sure.
I have to be doing those things. Other people fill those needs with in other ways. There's no right or wrong way to do that. But I think that people will always find a way to do that. And if they don't, maybe they need to, but I don't think that it's necessarily that it's necessarily important to society that everybody does that in a way that's necessarily a part of the economy. You know, like everybody's an occupation. Everybody doesn't necessarily have to have what right now we would typically consider to be an occupation.
Sure. Well, and so the only counterpoint I have to that is, and it's not fully a counterpoint, we can talk about why, is sometimes, like I suspect there are individuals, for me, I think that I'm one of them, providing for my living is a big part of that.
Yeah.
Right.
For some reason, I feel like I have to. It's part of what provides me meaning. Is I have to be providing for like everything I want in life. I have to be the one procuring it, and that's part of my meaning. And so, and the reason I said it's kind of a counterpoint is that, you know, whenever we get into talking about automating lots of jobs away, we kind of can see ourselves ending up somewhere where we don't have a lot of jobs left. And if we do that, then we have government stepping in to keep people alive, maybe, or something, and we can talk about what the alternatives are. But for this person, you know, for the government stepping in, keeping them alive, they're not going to like that. They're not going to like that at all.
Right. Well, we're automating what we can automate. I mean, you know, like y'all said, some people's jobs give them, you know, meaning, a sense of purpose. You know, I'm not knocking down the, you know, fast food service or any other services like that, but you know, I'm sure there's some guys that are like, get up and, you know, I love working at Burger King. It's what I do. But I don't see that being a very large part of it. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, they're doing it maybe out of necessity. Like, it's just
how many people derive their self-value from their occupation? I would argue very little.
It might be very little. Yeah, it might be very few. Like, I know several people who do, but that's super skewed.
And even then, even if it's like, like my mom was a stay-at-home mom growing up.
And that was her occupation in a sense.
Mom had me when she was 16 years old. She still lived with her parents. She moved out of her parents' house into her husband's house. She got married when she was 18, maybe 17 or 18. They moved in together and then he worked full time and she had two more kids and she spent all her time, you know, raising us. My dad worked for a living. I wouldn't say my mom didn't have a job. I wouldn't say she never worked in her life. Shit, dude. No. Like, my mom worked her ass off. She had raised me, you know, and I'm a pain in the ass.
Obviously. I mean, I can list several examples that would be inappropriate even for this show.
And I would argue that in many ways, like, that dealing with people and dealing with, like, developing each other, you know, and developing relationships with each other and all of those things we can't automate, at least right now. Like I've never you know, interpersonal communication is a huge part of our daily lives and computers can't do it, man.
No, and it's
think about how much better as a society we could all be if we were able to spend more of our time dealing with us.
Oh yeah, you know, and that's
less
that's
of our time worrying about like how the fuck to make food.
Yeah, we don't know how to make food. How are we able to produce, you know, an income and be able to survive with our families and have those types of relationships and be able to, you know, work on other things that can benefit society better without having an income, though. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Where?
What do we do with the people who, for lack of a better term, evolved to be fucking manual crazy beasts of labor? Like, what do we do with them when we can't put them to work?
Well, see, and it's like me and Brandon talked about earlier. It's
we put football helmets on them and we make them hit each other.
That's immoral. That sounds like that's dystopian.
I mean, that's what we currently do, you know. Or
it's still dystopian.
Yeah. You know, or we put a gun in their hands and we tell them to go kill other people, you know. But now we're automating their jobs too. We got drones doing that shit, you know.
Clearing out the streets of Detroit.
Oh, what was that movie? Yeah, you seen that movie, Real Steel?
No.
Oh my God, is that the Rock'em Sock'em Robots movie with Hugh Jackman?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, I wanted to see that and I forgot about it. No.
Yeah, dude, I love that movie. It's a really good movie. I liked it. But he talks about, he's like, he was a professional boxer. And then, you know, then they went to MMA. And then it changed from MMA. And then they started introducing robots because they wanted more violence. They wanted more hardcore. They wanted this. They wanted that. And it just kept changing and changing. And then you've got robots boxing, which, you know, completely automated a boxer and completely changed that realm. And I thought about it. I was like, is it really that far out there to think that, you know, something is that you would think, okay, there's no way that they can automate this and then take our, you know, to take those jobs and have people or have robots doing this such basic human of instinct as fighting. We can do that too.
Think about what fighting is. Think about what the UFC is like. Literally, like so you got people, and they're like, "Yes, I'm willing to sign this contract and get into a ring with somebody and ask them to basically punch my brain as hard as they can." Right. Like that's literally what they're doing in a lot of cases. Like boxers, especially, like they are just getting in the ring and asking for brain damage.
What do you do for a living? I get brain damage for a
living. I get brain damage for a living. I get brain damage and I try to dodge it sometimes, but most of the time I just try to do as much brain damage back as I can. And it's like, fuck, why are we still doing this? Why are we still allowing this? You know, and that's one part of my reaction. The other part of my reaction is I think we should have the freedom, especially now, because I do kind of ascribe to some of our traits coming from evolution. I do think there are some of us that are just, we just need to hit things.
Yeah.
Like it's just part of who we are. We just need to hit things. And if we can find a way to channel it constructively, that's great. But at the same time, these people are just signing up for brain damage.
Well, I mean, and who are we to say that that's, you know, of course there are certain situations where we as humans need to step in and be like, okay, this is not okay. Whenever it comes to sports and stuff,
you can't
though,
just pick up rocks and try to hit each other. Like that's not a game.
Don't do that. But, I mean, where's the line you draw? Is saying that we can't allow this, or we have to change this, or we can't let this guy who's willing and wanting to get in here and partake in this event say no, you can't do that. And then are we infringing on their rights? Are we telling them no, you can't do what you love?
Well, yeah, if they're consenting adults, why can't they try to get brain damage? I mean, we don't let people kill themselves. That's illegal. It's illegal to try, at least. I don't think that it's illegal if you succeed.
It's not.
So, like, it's down that road, right? Like, you're getting yourself closer to death by participating. And
yeah. Well, but beyond that, even, like, these types of brain damage... What's the name of the CTI?
CTE.
CTE, the disorder that you get from concussions.
I've heard it's actually the repeated small damage that does the worst over time.
Right. So that can have extremely detrimental effects on that individual's behavior. Yep. You know, so like Aaron Hernandez. They studied his brain. after he killed himself in prison. All right, so anybody who doesn't know, Aaron Hernandez was a tight end for the New England Patriots. He only played for the Patriots a few years.
Yeah.
He was one of the best tight ends in the league at the time. He was arrested for murdering someone, was in prison, and then eventually ended up killing himself in prison. They studied his brain, and they found that he was like 27, 28 years old, something like that. They found that he had advanced CTE that had been progressing for at least a decade. So since he was 17 or 18 years old, he had this disease that was getting worse and worse with every hit that he took. And and how much of his behavior you can attribute to that is unknown. We know that it has effects on people. For one, memory loss, but then also just violent mood swings and behavioral, certain behaviors that the person seemingly has little to no control over.
Difficulty thinking, impulsive behavior, depression or apathy, short-term memory loss, difficulty planning and carrying out tasks, emotional instability, substance abuse, suicidal thoughts or behavior.
Me and Isaac both grew up playing football as kids. Like, we both played through high school. I think we both had some aspirations of playing after high school. Neither of us did. There's the ability to give consent when you're an adult to do these things. And we could argue the merits of even allowing somebody to consent to giving themselves brain damage that could potentially lead them to harm other people that they might have to come in contact with. You know, if you're creating a situation where you will not have control over your mental faculties, you become a dangerous person. You certainly can become a dangerous person.
Yeah.
Beyond that, what I worry about for football is you can't consent to anything as a child. Your parents have to do that on your behalf. When I wanted to play tackle football, I could have played tackle football in fifth grade. My mom didn't let me because she thought I was too young. I would have consented in a heartbeat. In fact, I wanted, I argued with my mom over and over again to let me play tackle football. She made me play flag football for an extra year. Then in sixth grade, I got to play tackle football. I'm pretty certain in sixth grade, I had a concussion.
Damn.
I'm pretty certain I had at least one, possibly more than one concussion in sixth grade. I signed the forms and all that, but how much can what? How old are you in sixth grade? What, 13, something like that?
Yes,
that sounds right.
We knew a little bit. We knew enough then to know that like it's a potentially dangerous thing that I'm doing. Like I knew I could break bones and stuff like that. You know, I knew that getting hit in the head wasn't good for you. That's why we had helmets. But I didn't care. I was fucking 13 years old. I wanted to play with my friends, and I had a lot of fun doing it. And I built a lot of my character that I have built over the years. You know, a lot of these, who I am today is because of the sports that I played. But I don't know that I want my little brothers to ever play that game, because I understand now the risks associated with, you know, just even having one concussion can potentially lead to all these other things. You know, early onset dementia, you know, irrational behavior. You know, we have plenty of accounts of former NFL football players who will say, like, I don't remember whole seasons.
Yeah.
Or today, you know, like, you know, 20 years after playing the game, they'll be wandering a grocery store and not know how they got there. They're totally lost. They, you know, they don't even recognize their own children, things like this. You know, like, people get violent outbursts at their loved ones, you know, that they don't remember or can't control. You know, all of these things. Should we be allowing people to do these things? Well, should we be allowing adults to do these things? That's one argument. I don't think we should be letting children do these things, honestly. Especially when your formative years, when you're still, your brain's
learning,
still developing. Your brain's still developing. Like, men, our brains are still going through rapid developmental changes all the way through like our early 20s.
So I totally get the not wanting football around. I think that one thing we have to be careful about if we remove football is that rough and tumble play, as it's sometimes referred to, that's really healthy for young boys. Young, like, we learn a lot about socializing with each other by pretending to fight each other.
Yeah.
Or actually fighting each other.
Or actually fighting each other in Mexico. Yeah.
And on that note, I mean, you know, I can't think of how many friends that I personally knew of that if they weren't, you know, at wrestling or football practice or participating in those types of sports, that you and I both know who would have been out on the streets getting in trouble or doing something that they shouldn't have been doing. No, I can't say for certain, but
I would have. I probably would have.
I mean, you,
especially
you're a hood rat.
Yeah. Well, when I got into sports, you know, as a young teenager, you know, my parents were going through a divorce that wasn't the prettiest, and I genuinely just did not like being at home. I was unhappy there.
You hung out with me a lot.
Yeah, and sports was my way to get away from the world in a lot of ways, you know. And then even like having a job, like I'll talk about, like, I worked all the way through high school. Since I was old enough to have a job, I had one, you know. It was partly, you know, in order to like have money to, you know, buy gas to get to football practice and stuff, or to, you know, take a girl to the movies or something. But it was also to get away from home, you know.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a reflection on any, you know, particular individuals or anything, but like that is a significant thing for people in poverty, for people in difficult situations at home, or you know, people who just have difficulty just being alone or being with certain people or whatever, having somewhere to go and something to do. You know, these programs are useful in those ways, but there are other programs. There are other things.
Yeah.
You know,
there are theater.
For me, it was sports. Yeah. Music. For other people, it was music. For other people, it was, you know, Boy Scouts or whatever, you know, any number of things that
don't necessarily
involve brain damage.
Even like wrestling doesn't come with near the risk for brain damage.
Absolutely, you know.
Like, wrestling is not safe necessarily, but it's way safer than football.
Yeah.
No worries. It hurts you in other ways.
And we talk about, you know, one of the hot topics of today is, like, you know, what do they call it? Toxic masculinity. This idea that, you know, like, a man's purpose in life or whatever, or natural drive, is to dominate things and everything, you know, and we talk about the detrimental effects of that. But at the same time, you know, like I said, you know, football is a big part of what sculpted me as a human being, you know? Yeah. And I think that I learned a lot of useful lessons from that. Like, when I was a kid, with one of my first tackle football practice, my dad drove me to. One of the only practices my dad ever took me to as a kid, and like actually sat down and watched me practice. And you know, it was the first day of practice, tackle football. Most of the kids, you know, at least half of these kids have never played tackle football together. Never played tackle football in general. People were afraid to hit. I played for a group of coaches, one of those, groups of coaches who were very much into tackling, very much into hitting. It was, most of our practice is going to be hitting each other. Right. The first day that we put on pads, they lined us all up, you know, they put us in a very small lane. They gave one person a ball, lined somebody else up and said, "You run through that person." They told the other person, don't let him. And go. And that first day of practice, nobody had any interest in hitting each other. We were all just like going through the motions, you know, and everything. And when I got home, my dad tore me a new one. If you wanted to play tackle football, you got out there and you looked like a little, words that I'm not going to say on you. You know, and I wouldn't argue that my dad's methods are the best or anything. But he basically said things to the effect of tomorrow you're going to go to practice and I'm going to sit there and I'm going to watch you, and you are going to hit people. You were going to punish them for having the football. You are going to do that, or you will pay when you get home. And that next day of practice, when coaches lined everybody up and they said, "Who wants to play?" My hand came straight up. I was more afraid of my dad than I was of any 13-year-old. You know, I'm like, I don't care. You were three times my size. I will fight you to the death to not have to deal with my dad when I get home. So I did. I lined up against literally, it was the largest, the two hands that went up were me and the biggest guy on the team. And he had one, he even had a name that was scary. His name was Gonzalo. And I lined up against him and he had the ball and I hit him as hard as I possibly could. And I tackled him. It wasn't pretty. And he ran me over, but I got him onto the ground and everyone else on the team fed off of that energy. And all of a sudden we had a real practice going.
Yeah.
And I learned that day not to be afraid of things. I learned that, you know what, like, I'd rather put everything I have into something. I'd rather get hurt trying than never know what I could have done, you know? And I think that shaped me as a human being. And
be grateful for having that. I don't always have that. I've historically just been good at stuff. So I do it because I already know
it. It doesn't come naturally to all of us, Ben.
I that sucks. I mean, I guess it is what at least you learned how to be brave.
Right.
Ben's I was pretty brave, so.
No, I'm not brave at all. Like, I suck.
We're so far away from automation now.
that's fine.
Wow, whatever.
Enjoy the ride, viewers.
Well, I mean, and I was thinking about bringing it up, and, you know, automation, augmentation, I guess. I've seen a couple of different articles that I haven't really dove into, but, you know, advances in helmets and
other helmets. Products
of gear.
I've heard people make the argument that somebody once, and I had never thought about it this way, but they told me, you know what, you want to get rid of all these injuries in the NFL?
Get rid of the fucking pads.
Get rid of the pads, get rid of the helmets.
Yeah, make it hurt when you get hit. Make it
and
like.
I thought about it and I'm like, you know what? Like, that shit is it's a weapon, man.
Dude,
definitely you hit people harder than you ever would if you weren't hit wearing those
pads. Oh, yeah.
Like, dude, look at rugby. How many people get like.
Because we've played, I've played tackle football without pads and without helmets and never got hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because you're putting on kid gloves. Like, you're not, like, it hurts you too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And me and Brandon both destroyed our shoulders, the exact same shoulder, like a year apart from each other.
Yeah.
And
soulmates.
You know, thinking back on some of the hits that I took and, you know, delivered a couple times whenever I was lucky enough that, you know, it's like, all right, I've got these pads on. I'm all right. And, you know, for most of my years playing, I had a large neck roll on the back of my helmet. And it's supposed to help prevent against stingers and, you know, whiplash and your head going back. So that automatically into my head, okay, my neck's fine. I'll be good.
Oh, God.
And right. You know, just going in there, you know, not head first because, you know, one of the things that we learned and, you know, is form tackling, you know, the proper way to tackle someone without snapping your neck. Now, you know, you can learn that and you can do it every day, but when you get out onto the field in an actual game, you know, you're not thinking about proper head placement and, you know, you're running around there, flying around, hitting people.
Yeah.
But, and we used to call concussions, you remember, it's called getting your bell rung.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell me how many times I got my, you know, got my bell rung. And whether or not I was laying on the ground or I was the one that was standing there, like turning my helmet around, like, yeah, I just owned that guy. Oh.
I don't know how to even know whether or not it was a concussion or not. Like, I can think of a couple distinct times where like one time I lost a whole quarter, like a whole quarter of football was gone. And like, I just kind of came to, it was like a waking up from a dream, you know, and I'm standing on the field going, oh, where the fuck? Okay. Like, you know,
I've had that from drugs, but nothing else.
Let's do this. Yeah. But
that's crazy, yeah,
but
man.
Like, but they
said, no alcohol. I'm sorry.
You know, having your bell rung, like I remember that, like every, like almost every day of practice, you'd have something happen where, like, boom, like, you know, little helmet to helmet contact or something, you know, and all of a sudden, like, your world's ringing, you know, and who knows, you know, like, who knows how much brain damage we did to each other, and I don't think that necessarily like automating these things away and getting rid of like physical labor and stuff, I don't see how it could be a negative thing, except. Like I said, you know, I've learned a lot of things from activities that involved that, but I wouldn't necessarily say that it was the physical act of doing those things that made me learn.
Yeah.
There's plenty of ways to learn that don't involve necessarily even
so
directly doing something, you know.
Well, that wraps up episode 3, Social Issues. Thanks for listening to the Xeanderthals podcast.